I want to welcome you. This is titled Magan David, or Star of David. There is an interlocking, there are two interlocking triangles is typically depicted as the Star of David. There's a triangle over a triangle, inverted, that is often called the Seal of Solomon and is used in a cult. The difference between the two is that one is an interlocking triangle, the Star of David, and the other, a triangle over a triangle, often called the Seal of Solomon, is customarily used as the occult symbol. Now, I need to address this because many people just throw it around that the Star of David is occultic and it's all these symbols, and they are taking up without checking out the veracity of their sources, hearsay and what do they call them? Urban legends. Yes, that's the buzzword, urban legends. So first, let's look at the word, just because we're going to do some real fine line defining here. Connotation. What is to connote means to suggest or convey associations or overtones, in addition to the explicit or denoted meaning, as in the word mother means female parent, but it generally connotes love, care, tenderness, etc., to imply or involve. So connotation is something connoted, an idea suggested by or associated with a word, phrase, etc., in addition to its explicit meaning or denotation, as the politician has different connotations from statesman. All right. Now, what that means is you can have a symbol. There are lots of symbols on the earth, a tremendous amount of symbols. You can have a swastika. It's the symbol of the Nazi Third Reich. You can have a swastika that was used in Hindu mysticism. All symbols are, what does it mean to you in your heart? Not, okay, so that's what it, the connotation, your person, what's going on in your heart concerning a certain symbol as you see it. That is not necessarily what the symbol represents. Do I make myself clear? I hope. Because this is what we're dealing with when we're dealing with very inflammatory topics, one of which is the Star of David. And I've had many people confirm, oh, you have a Star of David on you. Oh, don't you know it's an occult symbol that means that and this? Well, no, that's not what it means to me. And that's not the general given meaning. Just because some occultist says it is, or some anti-Semite says that it's this in order to vilify Jews or Israel or Judaism, does not mean it is so. Now, I have a book that I purchased actually in Australia at the Holocaust in Sydney, the Holocaust Memorial Museum, called The Star of David, The Story of Judaism, Its Teachings, Philosophy, and Symbols by R. Brash, Rabbi Brash. Okay. Let me also tell you that at the university level, I've taken formal classes in Judaism and studied independently many Jewish texts and books. I'll go to the chapter and I'm going to read to you out of this book, The Shield of David, and then I will make some comments regarding The Shield of David. Chapter 30, The Shield of David. The Shield of David, David, Magan David in Hebrew, is a figured form of two interlocking equilateral triangles, one of them which is inverted. Today it is universally recognized as a Jewish emblem. Because of its shape, it is frequently referred to also as the Star of David. Synagogues display it conspicuously. It is emblazoned as the central symbol on the flag of the State of Israel, and it marks the graves of fallen Jewish soldiers of all nations. In Israel, the Red Cross is represented by the Red Shield of David. In spite of the emblem's present day, obvious and definite application, deep mystery surrounds its origin and meaning. Until modern times, its use among Jews was rare. Though the Magan David can be seen next to the swastika in the 2nd century synagogue of Capernaum, none of the medieval synagogues had it. In 1354, King Charles IV instructed the Jews of Prague to display the seal of David together with Solomon's seal on their flag. Ukrainian Jews used the symbol on their seals in the 16th century, and 100 years later, individual congregations made it their crest. Such isolated instances indicate that to begin with, and for many centuries, the two triangle star was generally not identified as a definitely Jewish symbol. It figured equally as an ancient pagan symbol, and Christian communities displayed it in the architecture and ornamentation of their churches and cathedrals. It appeared on a medieval Muslim flag in Morocco and could even be found in the old town hall of Vienna as a German boundary mark and simply as a Swiss tavern sign. The emblem's name is of comparatively recent origins, documented for the first time only in the 14th century. It occurs then in the writings of David ben Judah the Pious. All this added to the anxious concern of pious men to invest the mysterious sign with the authority of antiquity gave rise to much speculation and countless, and at times extravagantly fanciful, interpretations. The symbol's very obscurity fostered conjecture. And though many of the hypotheses proffered can be discarded, the message they reveal survives. It was inevitable that by its very description, people were led, erroneously, to associate the Shield of David with King David himself, both as a weapon he used and an expression he coined. The term itself was said to have resulted from his vanity and craving for recognition. Rabbinical tradition had it that one of the principal prayers of Jewish service was already known in David's time. It was Amidah, whose first benedictions concluded by praising God as the shield of Abraham. The king felt that it should be equally honored, and accordingly he asked God to permit the introduction of yet another benediction in the same prayer, praising him this time as the shield of David. But his request was refused. The king certainly could not be compared in moral stature to the ancestor of the Jewish people. Abraham had passed gloriously all 10 tests imposed on him, but David had failed dismally by a sin against Bathsheba. However, to accord him some recognition for his valiant deeds, it was felt that he too should be perpetuated in Jewish worship, though not in one of the most sacred prayers. In that way, the rabbis explain, it came to pass that God was praised as the shield of David in one of the benedictions, which on every Shabbat and holy day conclude the second lesson, the reading of the prophetic portion, the Haftarah. On the other hand, it was contended that in his fight against Goliath, David actually employed a shield of the very shape, which is now perpetuated in Jewry's symbol. Its special construction seemed well suited to protect both arm and head. But as in many other cases here too, the obvious was not the fact, as it is proved by reference to the biblical text. When young David volunteered to confront Goliath, he at first wore King Saul's own armor, but he took this off when he found it encumbered him. And while the giant approached him with sword, spear, and shield, David carried nothing but a sling and 5 smooth stones in a shepherd's bag. At all times, Jews have had to face up to new ideas, religions, and philosophies. Judaism has never ignored them. Its reactions have left their mark in Jewish writings, teachings, and customs. In the fact that the Bible, for instance, so distinct and definite in its legislation on almost every human aspect, is silent on the question of death and burial, is not due to oversight. On the contrary, it is the result of vehement reaction to the Israelites' experience in Egypt, where death was the master of all, expressed most vividly by the pyramids. Circumcision became the outstanding Jewish symbol of initiation into the faith of Abraham, in reaction to the adoption of the Jewish rite of baptism as a Christian sacrament. The prohibition of the seething of a kid in its mother's milk was similarly explained by Maimonides as a protest against an ancient pagan custom. It is therefore not beyond the range of possibility that the Shield of David also owes its existence to a spiritual battle and was created in the 6th century BCE during the Babylonian exile in opposition to the teachings of Zoroaster. Professed today by only a small minority in India, Zoroastrianism at that time had spread from its source in Persia to become a powerful force which captured the imagination of people far and wide. In its philosophy of dualism, it taught that not one god, but two powers ruled the universe. Ethically speaking, they were good and evil, while cosmologically they were expressed by light and darkness. Each power had its own symbol, a triangle with the apex pointing upward or downward. Man had to choose which power to serve. Such teaching was totally inconsistent with the Jewish conception of life in God. It was a threat to the pure monotheistic faith inherited from Abraham, which taught that there was one God only, who was the author of all things. Jewish prophecy raised its voice against the dangerous new doctrine. The Bible contains a telling passage which unmistakably was written in direct opposition to Zoroastrian influence. The words are those of the great unknown prophet of the exile, commonly referred to as Deutero-Isaiah. I am the Lord, and there is none else. There is no God beside me, that they may know me from the rising of the sun, and from the west, that there is none beside me. I am the Lord, and there is none else. I form the light and create darkness. I make peace and create evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. To the forceful voice of the prophetic protest was added an even more powerful symbol, which united the two separate Persian signs representing the force of light and darkness into one insoluble unity, the Star of David. Its very shape, the combination of two triangles, denied the belief in two coexistent forces and proclaimed the indivisible unity of God, who was the creator of light and darkness, good and evil. It is a fascinating interpretation, yet it counts for the symbol's shape alone and not its name. It is here that another theory suggests a remarkable explanation. For centuries, the shield served man as a means of defense, but it created one problem. By covering up this soldier, the shield prevented his being recognized, and with the absence of distinguishing uniforms, which were a much later invention, in the heat of battle, it became most difficult to differentiate between friend and foe. Some kind of identification was needed. An obvious move was to mark the shield on the outside with a distinctive sign. Psychological considerations add to its importance. If well chosen, it could serve as a forceful symbol which, in addition to revealing the soldier's allegiance, would intimidate his adversary. Like a challenge, it could concisely and dramatically proclaim the cause for which the soldiers fought. In the memory of the Jewish people, there was no greater hero than King David. His figure dominated their thoughts and inspired them in battle, so much so that all the messianic dreams centered on him. David was the ideal king. Once upon a time, he had led the Israelites victoriously in war and established their freedom. Surely out of his house would arise the new Savior, who would bring final deliverance and everlasting peace. The people could choose no finer symbol than David's name, which to them was so full of happy memories and glorious anticipation. To fight under his sign would certainly mean victory. Several difficulties arose. The symbol was addressed not to the Jews, but to their foes, instantaneously had to understand its meaning. The space on a shield was limited. Conciseness was essential. How could David's name be shortened in a way that at once presented a definite message and a memorable sign? Each problem was overcome in turn. As Hebrew was unknown to the enemy, his own language, Greek, was chosen. David's name began and ended with the same letter, the Delta, which consisted of a triangle. Therefore, instead of the king's full name, a combination of two deltas was used. To save space, the deltas were not placed next to each other, but interlocked. The result was the shield of David, which embossed on the shields of the fighters was soon recognized as the Jews' symbol. It was natural that a sign bearing David's name should acquire deep messianic meaning in the minds of the people, the more so because its very shape brought to mind the prophecy in the book of Numbers, in which the pagan seer Balaam spoke of the star that would arise out of the house of Jacob to destroy the foe. Though the passage probably referred to King David himself, later religious thinkers applied it to the messianic figure. It was this tradition that led to the Parakokzba, leader of the last desperate attempt to throw off the Roman yoke in the 2nd century at the time of the Emperor Hadrian, to call himself, with the full approval of Rabbi Akiva, Bar Kokhba, the son of the star. He himself fervently believed in his divine mission, and the people considered him the expected Messiah. Perhaps the facts that the Christian cross symbolized a Messiah who had already come rendered the Magan David in direct opposition, the star of the coming Messiah. Thus a shortened word became a guiding star in a simple Greek letter, doubled and intertwined, a Jewish symbol of mighty force. Once engraved on the shields of heroes, it remained for all time, the Jewish emblem, shining forth out of the distant past. It led the Jews towards a hopeful future and messianic fulfillment. Another explanation, ingenious though less probable, was probable. By the way, this particular explanation up here, the one that I just said about being on the shields of in order to identify friend or foe in a battle, when I went to the Israeli Museum. The Biblical History Museum in Jerusalem, which is across from the Shrine of the Book and the Israeli Antiquities Museum. In the basement, they had a small exhibit on different stars from different cultures, and the traditional 5-pointed, 6-pointed, and 8-pointed stars, the Islamic stars. The 8-point is Islamic, and then they went along with the 6-pointed star, the interlocking triangle, with that, that is the generally accepted explanation of the symbol of the Magan David. It was actually an interlocking triangle put on the shields to identify who's who in the battlefield. Another explanation, ingenious though less probable, was suggested by M. Guterman. This linked the Magan David with the Celtic tradition and interpreted it as an ancient sign of the Druids, whose magicians used the hexagram as a charm against the Druids, the ghosts of the night. Originally, therefore, Guterman asserts the sign's name was the shield of Druid, not David. Rendered in the usual Hebrew spelling, it consisted of the letters D-R-V-D. When later the original meaning of the word became lost and Jews no longer knew of Druids and Druids, they simply omitted the letter Resh and discovered in the remaining three letters DVD and the name David, and ever since have incorrectly rendered the Magan David as Magan Druid as Magan David. Now this is probably where one of the occultic implications stem from this legend. Not history, possible explanations. Man's development has led him from the superstition to the conquest of fear. In the early stages of history and still today in the primitive mind, magic had its definite place in the pattern of life. Man considered himself surrounded by all kinds of mischievous forces which threatened his health, happiness, and very life. Magic alone, he believed, could protect him and ward off such evil influences. Judaism opposed such an attitude. The very basis of magic denied the Jewish belief in God's omnipotence. If God was all-powerful, it was impossible for other forces to interfere, as they, too, had to be subject to his will. Yet there were moments when even the Jewish mind did not remain immune from superstition. This was especially so in times of persecution, when life became almost unbearable. And in places where Jews came into close contact with people and nations whose whole existence was dominated by the occult. Pure monotheistic faith was then at its weakest, and the Jews' rational outlook at its lowest. It was in such a circumstance that the Jews, out of superstitious fear, grasped at anything which might give them security and keep evil at bay. Customs created then still exist, but have been reinterpreted innocuously and given new and sometimes even beautiful meanings. Originally, however, they were the result of not deep religious emotion, but of irrational fears, not of a God-centered life, but of superstition. At such times, almost every phase of existence was surrounded by a protective screen. Nothing was left open to possible mysterious attacks. Everything was armed magically. Bible verses were used as a protection. God's name was inscribed on amulets, which in Hebrew were called kameya, a word that has wrongly been given the credit for having created the English cameo. Mystical letters were invented and incantations chanted. When a woman gave birth to a child, special tickets were fixed around her bed to keep away Lilith, the demon who was considered to be seeking the young child's life. Again, at a wedding, evil forces were thought to threaten the couple's happiness, and magic seemed the only safeguard. That is why the bride originally walked 7 times around the bridegroom, and the bridegroom had to break a glass. But even more than at a wedding, it was at death that the mystery of the unknown oppressed the mind. Evil forces then seemed to be at their strongest. Insecure and helpless, man once again sought refuge in magic. To frighten away all bad spirits and hauntings, the mourner poured out water, and before leaving the cemetery, threw dust or tufts of grass over his shoulder. Thus, for life and death, the people were armed with magic customs and habits against the unknown powers. Most prominent among these customs was the use of charms, and one of them was the Star of David. The fact that it was so employed may explain its description as a shield. It was thought to ward off evil and bring good luck. Numerous examples are at hand from the Holy Land in Eastern Europe, extending from the days of antiquity to recent times. Some 1,700 years ago, the Shield of David was used as a magic emblem in the catacombs of Bet She'arim. A Russian 19th century mezuzah container displayed it with the telling Hebrew words, "The Watchman of the Doors of Israel." Countless amulets and talismans bore the six-pointed star. As a cure, Kabbalists had it tattooed or drawn on the skin of the sick people. The symmetrical form of the star was explained as a symbolic expression of the identity of the upper and lower worlds, the natural and supernatural. Its 6 points were seen as representative of the universality and omnipresence of God, whose power extends to north, south, east, west, below, and above. Its 12 corners were interpreted as representative of the 12 tribes of Israel. The intertwined equilateral triangles were believed to combine mystically the beginning of the world with present-day existence, the 6 points being the 6 days of creation. Thus, a vast number of possible and sometimes fantastic symbolical, historical, and mystical explanations of the Star of David are offered. In 1897, the first Zionist Congress held in Basel officially adopted it as a Jewish symbol. It was to become the centerpiece of the flag of the newly created State of Israel. However, in all its history, nothing did more to sanctify the star than Nazi brutality and murder. It was chosen as a compulsory badge of shame to brand the Jew, and as a tattoo to mark the victims of concentration camps who, bearing the symbol, went to their deaths. No other sign could be more powerful than the Shield of David. Symbolic of the Jews' belief, simultaneously it speaks of Jewish endurance, heroism, and miraculous rebirth. What the cross is to the Christian, the crescent to the Muslim, the shield of David has become to the Jews. Now, I rest my case with that. I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm not anti-racial. I'm not anti-sex. I'm none of those things. We are all God's creatures in Christ. But when someone comes and lambasts the Star of David, I hear behind it anti-Semitism, because it has become the symbol of the Jews that were genocided in the Nazi Holocaust. All right, please, you know, these things are, this is not, it's a major issue in a lot of ways, because it speaks of something when you take a symbol and say, well, this is occultic and this is wicked and it's evil and take it down from your churches and take it down from here, there. Whoa, wait a minute. Maybe it's the wicked and the evil in your own heart. Maybe you need to look at your own heart and the connotations that you're putting on it that aren't there. I rest my case.
Ah. שבה הבטיח לשוב.